How does it feel to be doing this from the morning?
You know, Ben, great question. I got to say, the sun is pouring into this room at Oxide. I don't think I quite realized how much absolutely nuclear bomb direct sun exposure this thing gets in the morning. So I'm kind of like hiding a little bit in the shade, but it is glorious. I got to tell you, I got my morning cup of coffee. I'm really excited for this. How does it feel for us to be doing this in a time that includes you? I'm so sorry.
This is good.
Can you hear me?
Adam from Italy.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I mean, don't take this the wrong way, Adam, but I think you sound better than you do in Alameda. I mean,
I think so too. I have an upgraded microphone for this.
I just want to make clear that I'm not accusing you of using an AI-generated photo of Italy. I'm just saying, like, the photo that you posted is a little on the nose for what a generative AI might imagine that Italy would look like. It's just a little too on brand.
If you spent any time in a European Airbnb, regardless of the country, you know that they always have a large canvas of a black and white scene of London with a colorized red bus. So I think that's the first clue that this is not actually... Italy.
You just got some things that are not adding up. I love the European window dimensions. I love the tall, narrow windows. It's nice. It's a very European thing. You know, I think it's like that's how the AI knew to generate in Europe.
Okay. Yeah. I know another very European thing. When I was going through airport security in Germany, they pulled out this microphone and wanted to have a chat about microphones.
Are they listeners to the pod? Are they like,
dude, now they are.
Exactly.
I'm just one person at a time.
We'd be like, even the baseball one.
I'm loving this.
I have managed to offend all of our German
there
listeners.
There we go. I'm apologize, so sorry. Germany.
Will you follow? Exactly. An important message to our German community from Oxide and friends. Apology videos have kind of gone. I'm trying to bring apology videos back. I just feel like, guys, I can't believe we have to have this episode. I never thought I'd be saying this, but Germany, I'm so sorry for what Brian did. I think I'm making it worse. I am really excited for this.
Me too. This feels like another long time coming kind of episode.
Really long time coming. I feel like this is like the episode we were in all along. I feel that because you know I was listening and I'm really glad that we are doing it now and not a couple of years ago because we have made so many very recent changes. That are really, really important. And I also feel that one of the things that we have done, and we'll talk about this a bunch over this episode, but we have open sourced the software that we use to do this. And I think that if anybody's listening to this wondering like, God, I really like a lot of aspects of the system, but I don't know. I don't want to just like take theirs. It's like, you can definitely take it.
Orienting people. What we are talking about
now, but then with this again. Okay. You know, it's like we're only a couple minutes in. I was going to wait for another 10 minutes, but yeah, for sure. Go ahead. Fine.
Orient. Fine. Blow the big reveal.
All right. Oh, now, what are we talking about, Mr.? We have to tell people what we're talking about. Go ahead. Read the tweet.
Yeah. Mr. I read the comments on social media. We are talking about Oxide requests for discussion, which is, we were talking about what to name this episode. And you stumbled onto, I think, the backbone of Oxide, and that is just so spot on. It is the mechanism by which we make all kinds of decisions about the product, about the company, the way we articulate ideas, articulate research. It is really the durable entity that has been with Oxide from very, very early on.
Very early on. And I mean, it predates Oxide, really. And we'll kind of get into the history there. But it really is the backbone. As you and I were kind of iterating on titles, I think you were kind of wanting me to go bigger on titles, and you're right. I mean, it's like this is really important. Then you said this in our episode on culture idiosyncrasies as well. That like this is idiosyncratic, and on the one like it doesn't feel like it should be idiosyncratic because we did not invent literacy, and we did not invent the importance of writing down one's ideas or reading the ideas of others. But I think a bunch of the things that we've done, borrowing from ideas elsewhere, have added up to something that is idiosyncratic, but I think it shouldn't be, which is the reason that I kind of bridle with that. But it is idiosyncratic. But regardless of whether it's idiosyncratic or not, it is essential to Oxide. And it has been it really, really, really important. It is really hard to overstate the importance of RFDs, and they're becoming way more important, actually.
Yeah.
In fact,
the longer they live, I think is what you're getting at. Some of these ones that we wrote ages and ages ago have become really essential to understand where we were. I mean, which is not to diminish the value of the ones that we're still writing, but it's really proving its value as we look back and as these things age.
Yes. And the other thing that has been just extraordinarily important is the ability to make single RFDs public.
Hmm.
And that is life-changing for us because it now allows us to begin to, and we've done this over time, but we are getting more and more RFDs out there, and allows it for us to be that kind of public vector as well.
Yeah.
And so that has been absolutely essential. And that's all built on the terrific work of Ben and Augustus and David Crespo, who are all with us today. So their work has been like, it kind of started off as like, oh, like this is nice. Like, oh, this is great. Like, this is great. And then, you know, they, and again, we'll get into the whole history of this, but then added things were just like, oh, wow. Okay. This is really great. Like, this is profoundly great. And now we're just like, okay, this is now like load bearing. This is we now cannot envision the system without this. This is extremely important. Yeah. So, but I'd like to get into the history before, if we may.
Well, if I may, yeah. So I want to get into the history, but I quick quiz question for you, because I was looking back at RFD1. RFD1 yes. describes the RFD process.
Yes.
Do you know when that was written? Because obviously it was very early in the company's history. Would you want to put a guess on when that was?
I will tell you that it is, there's a reason that it's written. I mean, so Jess and I are listed as the co-authors because Steve was not yet working in the garage. So this has got to be, this is going to be in August of, I think, of 2019.
Well, maybe, the first commit.
Maybe we retroactively made it after September 9th. The company's founded on September 9th, 2019.
So the commit message was October 18th, 2019. So maybe you're waiting for a corporation.
Yeah, I think we're waiting for a corporation.
There you go. But like certainly before money was in the bank or lots of other stuff. But it was like you've got to be one of the first things you did.
First things we did, absolutely the first thing. First thing we did, and it actually felt like it felt like something we could do as well. So do you know what I mean? Where, because we didn't have money in the bank, we were raising around, and there's like, you're kind of limited about how much of this company you can build with zero additional people and no money. Right. And, you know, what are the kinds of things you can go do? And like you can do a podcast. We were recording on the metal during that time. Right. And, but we were established. You look at like RFD2, I think, is principles and values, right? So that we were, RFD3 is our hiring process. So we were getting, like, it's not an accident that these are kind of the first things we're laying down. And RFD1 is the RFD process itself. So, I mean, it was extremely early. That's interesting. The first commit message isn't until October. Maybe I had this kind of image of, but you know what? As you say that, I am feeling cold in that garage, that unheated garage. That thing got like frosty October, November, December. Like, we really did need to move into a place with heating. And so, yeah, maybe.
instead, you got the Oxide office, which is barely heated, but that's a subject of a different podcast.
Okay. You are apparently emphasizing barely in that. I am emphasizing heated. I think it is heated. Right. If barely, no, we got it's fine. It's actually, today's gonna be warm, so it's gonna be a roaster in the office today. In terms of the history here, and Robert, I'm hoping you can help me out, because I'm realizing that like my recollection of this, I'm gonna be interested to like compare notes on the recollection of this. So For the history of this, actually, you have to go back before Oxide, certainly, before Joyent, actually, and have to go back to Our Days at Sun, Adam. This is kind of where the earliest stuff of this gets laid down. Sun, I think not unusually, had this architectural review process. And in particular, there was a platform software architectural review committee, PSARC. And PSARC would approve architectural changes to the operating system. And it was I'm sure we've mentioned, we probably talked about PSARC in the DTrace episode, but PSARC was this body that fancied itself a pretty august body, but you would develop materials for a PSARC case. And I mean, Adam, I'm sure you had the same experience where the development of materials for your PSARC case, I thought was very valuable, where you'd be writing your own materials, or, you know, you would have a case and would iterate on it with like Mike and me before you submit it, or whomever, right? Roger, whatever. That process I felt to be very valuable.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, because I felt like at the time,
yes.
I'm not sure I remember it the same way. Like, I remember there were certainly parts of it that were valuable, and parts of it which felt like a trip to like the DMV or like global entry. No.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
No, so what I'm saying is, it was like the part of the process that was valuable was the part of the process where you wrote everything down. That was valuable.
Right.
And I found many issues in my own stuff small issues, but like, okay, oh, right. As I'm writing this down, I'm like, I'm realizing like, I hadn't quite thought about this. Mm. And I'm going to get ahead of some kind of just the ill-conceived discussion about this.
Right.
So I'm going to clarify this, right? And that was all valuable. And then everything from that was not valuable. And in fact, was awful. Because you had spent, if you worked on this earnestly, you're like, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. And, you know, other than it's not impossible that someone would have a suggestion that would be valuable, but that's not the way the PSARC generally phrased. PSARC was not phrased as suggestions. It was phrased as like approval or rejection. And
it was very much this body of senior engineers, air quotes around that, but like folks who've been doing this for a while and felt like they were the parole board of like what could be and what could not be.
Parole board is a really good way of phrasing it. Like, I don't know, like, are you a recidivist? Is this going to, it just feels like, I know you've had a couple character witnesses in here, but I don't know. You just feel.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that too, where it was like, I don't know, you would kind of work these folks a little bit beforehand, you know. The politics of it was onerous.
The politics of it was onerous, and I mean, I know we turned the cockroach episode into a Postgres episode, so I don't want to turn the RFD episode into a dark episode. But that said, you're like, why would you be saying this unless that is exactly your intent? But I do think it's worth mentioning that, and I would say that if you are in an engineering cultural milieu that has this kind of august review boards, a trick that worked exceedingly well was to deliberately have an issue. And this is, by the way, has a deep history in software engineering. This is the Queen's Duck. But deliberately have an issue that is a small issue that everyone can wrap their brains around, that you yourself are equivocating on. Like, God, I just don't know what to call this thing. I don't like, what should be the name for this thing?
Or even, importantly, even better
about the results.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to not care about the results.
Even if you've already decided, just like whether you're equivocating or not, it's something that doesn't matter, but is a delightful shed for them to discuss the color of.
That's right. And this, and I mentioned this is the Queen's Duck, which goes back to a game called Battle Chess. I don't know if you ever played this game, Adam. This is in like 80s, early 90s. It was VP at the company was making Battle Chess was a famous kind of micromanager. So they would deliberately introduce things that they know that he would be, they would basically occupy him. And so he would all, and one of the things is they had the queen in battle chess holding a duck. And he'd be like, you know, he's like kind of looking over it very thoughtfully. And then like, you know, the queen should not be holding a duck. Like, oh God, yes, thank you. Yes, thank you. So they, this is a trick that works extremely well. We did this and it worked all too well. But all that is wasted energy. Like, you should not need to, like, all of that is the organizational politicking, and it sucks, and it's not uplifting even when it works extremely well. Okay, when it works extremely well, it's a little uplifting, but not very uplifting, and it's a waste of energy. But the thing that was valuable was writing all that stuff down. And then, so, okay, we went to Fishworks, where we wrote nothing down, I think. We wrote
not only, do you remember our first bug database? It was literally
a text file.
A single text file under RCS control.
SCCS control, sir.
Oh, that's right. Excuse me. No,
I will thank you not to refer to SCCS as RCS. I will thank you to not refer to our defunct source code management system as a different defunct source code management system.
And every bug had to be summarized on a single line of text, ideally within 80 columns. Yes. Anyway.
Yeah, do you know what that bug database is from? That's the Detroit bug database before we
That's right.
Don't you remember that?
Yeah. I was going to air that dirty laundry.
That text file has a deep pedigree. Friend. But we, other than writing one line of text for every bug that we fixed, there was basically nothing. And we certainly were dealing with Peace Arc, and we were kind of a renegade outfit to begin with, and talk about an outfit that should not have been paroled. And then I went to Joyant, and we kind of fast forward a couple of years, and I was really missing writing things down, and it was happening kind of sporadically. And Robert, obviously this is where I would love to call on your memory, because my memory is that Alex Wilson, our colleague at Joyant, was working on a container naming service for what was then Triton, and was really looking for a vessel in which to write it down. And I think that there'd been a lot of pressure building in general, where we actually need to have a way for people to write things down. And it had been enough time since the scarring of Peace Arc, where, because I think actually one of the things I kind of resent about Peace Arc is that it took me years to really appreciate the value. And Adam, maybe you're still getting there, because you're like, did you just say Peace Arc was valuable? Because like that's not my memory at all. It took me years to appreciate the value and be able to separate it out from the things that were really, that could be frankly pretty upsetting as an engineer. Once I kind of had not had this for an extended period of time, it's like, yeah, we really need to get right. I miss writing ideas down. Robert, is that your,
So I think that's kind of right. And I think we had also reached kind of a software complexity. So when we were talking about this, my recollection is, you know, we were kind of going back on what was good about Peace Arc, what was bad about Peace Arc. And in particular, it was kind of like the 20 questions part of it. Like, you know, not necessarily did you write every manual page down into a case. That was there. But more of the, like, what are we trying to do and why? We had kind of gotten to the point where both Triton and Manta had reached a level of complexity as well, where it's just like, how do these things intersect? Like, what actually happens when you're building this, and that the act, to your point, the act of writing it down just forced you to think about it a little bit ahead of time. But I think that's kind of, you know, where we were. And then I think we kind of used Alex as the first willing,
And that's what I was trying to remember, is like whether to what degree it was like Alex is like, I need a place to write this. But yeah, Alex was definitely, however it was, Alex was the first RFD. And
yeah, I think it was both. I think we kind of both were looking for it, and then looking for, you know, a way to kind of lead with a couple examples of what we were looking for, because it was kind of a hard thing to, you know, if you just like, what is the actual shape of this kind of amorphous document?
Right.
And so you want to have, you know, something that kind of describes, like, what's the problem? You know, what are we actually proposing? How does this intersect? You know, especially for kind of like a bunch of stuff for us was, you know, then, you know, what is actually going to be user visible? Like, how do some of these APIs, what are some of these APIs, what are these sketches of them, so we understand how they fit together?
That's right. And I think that, you know, and this has happened to me a lot in my career where, you know, I'm trying to come up with something that I think is like, wow, this is like totally unique. And like, oh, you know, this is very idiosyncratic or iconoclastic, what have you. And then, I mean, at some point, as we were thinking about this, Robert, like kind of the light was going on. Because like, what you want is something that's like, I want it to be pretty loose. I want to encourage people to write things down more than getting them exactly right. And as we're kind of thinking about this, we're like, wait a minute, these are RFCs. This is how the internet was built. Like how this is right in front of us. This is what RFCs and you know, in Joint's RFC repo, I reference RFC 3, and the IETF has these requests for comments, and RFC 3 just absolutely nailed what we were after. And it was kind of like, I've like managed to like reinvent something that was right in front of me for my entire career, more or less. And I felt a little bit silly for not having seen it, but then they're like, okay, so this is like, we need to take this and extend that. And I just love this note from RFC 3 that the content of a note may be any thought, suggestion, et cetera, related to the software or other aspect of the network. Notes are encouraged to be timely rather than polished. I love that line. Philosophical positions without examples or other specific suggestions or implementation techniques without introductory or background explication and explicit questions without any attempted answers are all acceptable. The minimum length for a note is one sentence. These standards or lack of them are stated explicitly for two reasons. First, there's a tendency to view a written statement as ipso facto authoritative, and we hope to promote the exchange and discussion of considerably less than authoritative ideas. Second, there is a natural hesitancy to publish something unpolished, and we hope to ease this inhibition. Those paraphrases are from RFC 3. That is Steve Crocker, April 1969. And man, Adam, doesn't that feel like that is just like absolutely true today?
So spot on. In particular, the like just encouraging people to get over the hump of not letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. Just write the thing down. Doesn't need to be perfect. Better written, better sent. Let other people work on it. Love that sentiment.
Totally. And it's like, and as a result, like there is going to be a wide variety of quality here. I mean, there has to be. Right. There's going to be, and there are going to be there are RFCs that are extraordinary, and there are many RFCs that are forgettable. And like, that's okay. We're not trying to make something that is kind of, and we're in particular, what I loved about that is like, this is not something that's kind of up for approval. This is you writing down your own ideas. And then Robert, as we were kind of thinking about RFCs versus my recollection is like, we just wanted to have a different nomenclature, because we felt we'd be just confusing ourselves all the time if we were talking about RFCs. And we were kind of looking for a different nomenclature. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's my recollection, especially like in the era of like chatbots that will like link to things. I think the bot already did like RFCX to, you know, the actual IETF RFC. So that was going to be doubly confusing. So I think it was that. And then I also, that way we could just distinguish it from what, you know, from the IETF. That's mostly why we chose a different name.
Right.
I don't think there was too much different.
I don't think it was too much beyond that. I think it was just kind of like, you know, I think we would have called it like, yeah.
Yeah. I think the sentence you have, the parenthetical you have at the end of that, the joint RFD intro, is probably about as accurate as it is.
Yeah. Which is, we use the term request for discussion in lieu of request for comments to avoid conflation with the IETF construct. And the more formal writing that it has come to represent. Because RFCs are now kind of drifted from that RFC 3 ethos and zeitgeist and are now quite a bit more formal. So we wanted to draw inspiration from RFCs, but be something slightly different. And RFCs were born. And Robert, I feel it was like, I mean, I don't know if you and I spoke about this. I'm sure we did. But I remember thinking very shortly after Alex's RFD 1 and we start getting a bunch of RFDs, I'm like, oh, man. We waited too long to do this. I felt like this was so, should have done this earlier. I mean, on the one hand, it's like, it's great. Like, okay, this is clearly like, this is a big step in the right direction, but it's such a big step in the right direction that felt like we should have done this earlier.
Yeah. And I think we had one or two, you know, like one-off documents that had come along the way. Like, I don't remember if we had something as formal for Manta. I think I wrote up a bunch for the Fabrics stuff in like 2013, 2012.
Yeah.
They were just kind of like one-off documents that we would just kind of store and toss on, you know, the like local HTTP server for folks to build to see. And then I guess eventually we had Manta, we tossed it in there, but.
Yeah. And where did those go? I mean, I just don't remember where those, because I mean, they must have existed. I just don't know where they went.
I think they've been the sands of time.
Yeah. So this was in, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing that like this is in, I mean, the first RFP is in 2015. And so we did, how did we do engineering for 5 years, Robert? I just don't know.
Very well, thank you.
Fair. So, and then, so Robert, what were our experiences with RFDs at Joyent? Because I felt like there were some things that worked really well, namely the idea was great and was important. Then there were other things that, I don't know, what was your take on things that worked well and things that did not work well in that kind of that first embodiment of this?
Yeah, I think, you know, but definitely a bunch of things we were trying to figure out is kind of like, what is the content? You know, how do we section it? I was going back and looking at the prototype we had for the RFD at Joyent. And it's literally just like, okay, there's a title and that's it. And I think sometimes that not even having like, you know, not that there's too many more sections than what we have at Oxide, but I think having a little bit there helps. And then I think the method of discussion is still something that we're trying to iterate and figure out, you know, what's the right way to do it. You know, some of it was just kind of like, there's an issue, or, you know, some folks discuss in chat, or sometimes we had an email thread and that worked okay-ish. I don't know.
I mean,
pros and cons there. GitHub PR today is differently painful because of GitHub more so than anything else.
It is painful, but it is much better than it was at Joyent. At Joyent, like, we did not. I mean, the grand irony of RFDs at Joyent is the discussion piece was not. It was really hard to discuss them, because we would do this with GitHub issues, Adam, and it did not work well. Because it was very hard to like comment on particular pieces. You know what I mean? Comment on like, hey, the word choice or whatever. And like, if you walk up to an RFD that is, you know, old, how do you go and be like, you know, this paragraph is no longer correct? Or you just like, you're filing issues on all these things. And it's like, the discussion was not great. So that I think was a big needs improvement. But I think the idea, like, we could see that a bunch of, another thing that was actually really important, Robert, is that it was in a repo. I felt like this is a very important, folks may look at RFDs and be like, well, wait a minute, why not just like Google Docs or whatever? And I think, I'm sure, what were you doing at Delphix and then Transposit, Adam?
We were using, at Delphix, we had a sort of similar system. I mean, born of some similar problems. When I joined Delphix, the problem I saw was that like everyone in engineering was very clear on what they thought we should do, and everyone's idea was different. And everyone felt ignored, but ignored without having really raised the issue. So we started a process fairly similar to let people express those ideas, express, you know, why they thought we should do them, that kind of stuff, and kind of have their day in court, like as part of a group discussion. So it was somewhere between what you're describing at Joyent and a little bit of the PSAR case without some of the rigmarole and like council of elders, but more focused on like on product discussions. But yeah, what we did was mostly in Google Docs, which I think has some downsides, in particular what you're alluding to about like the lack of searchability. And there we like layered additional indexing on top of it and like a meta document to keep track of everything. But then some benefits too, like it's much easier to have multiple authors simultaneously.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that what the world wants, and what we're kind of leading up to, is you want kind of a Google Doc front end on that has an ASCII doc back end going to a canonical repository. Is kind of like, that's what you want. That doesn't exactly exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think some of the other bits here, you know, locating everything in a repo makes it very easy to see what's changed over time. The discoverability was big. And then, you know, we ended up with Markdown initially, mostly because, like, I don't know, it was, you know, it was the thing to do du jour. It was easy to see what? Rendered. Trent had his Python Markdown too, which we had used for a lot of docs and other things historically.
Well, part of the reason I'm chuckling is because we did Markdown at Oxide, and we supported Markdown and ASCII doc. And yeah. Adam, I think it was you who took me aside at some point. It's been like, hey, you say that RFDs are in Markdown or ASCII doc. Like, yeah, exactly. It's like, you should know that only yours are in Markdown. Everyone else's are in ASCII doc. So when you say Markdown or ASCII, I'm like, I actually... Adam, I don't think I'm inventing this conversation. I really appreciated it. Like, I had a giant piece of lettuce on my teeth, and only you had
for months.
My oldest and dearest friends were willing to take me aside and tell me what an ass I was making of myself. Yeah. I'm like, you mean no? And I kind of didn't believe you. I'm like, surely other people? No, nope. Okay. No one else can be a Markdown. Nope, it's just me. And that was a quick rework. I definitely, like, I am reworking them right now. They are all going to be at ASCII doc. I'm so sorry. Yes.
But I think it's fair to say that we're weird for our obsession with ASCII doc. Like, I think lots
of... Is that
like,
right?
I think so.
I mean, probably. Given how we're weird on
everything else, right?
Part of this evolution, I think, came from a few steps. I mean, once you're in the non-WYSIWYG worlds, like once you're not in like, you know, a Word or Google Docs, then there's kind of two challenges. One, and this may be my own fault, but like it is very hard to, in the Markdown days, particularly in like 2012, 2015, to see a rendered Markdown doc per se locally without pushing it somewhere up.
Yep.
And that for me was just my own mental foible of just like wanting to see like, hey, does this render correctly before I push it?
I think mental foible is a little self-effacing. It is my own weakness that I would like to be able to, I don't know, see what this thing looks like before it feels like.
Robert, this is like how you always want to test your code before you integrate it.
Tough but fair. And then I think the other thing that we kind of saw as we were getting down, and I think the first joined, so actually Alex Wilson, who wrote RFD1, was the first one to use ASCII doc in an RFD at Joyent. And I think he did it. Yeah. He was the one who found it and pointed us towards it. And I want to say it was probably for RFD 77 there. And once you kind of got to, you know, I think one of Markdown's strengths was, you know, it was very simple. One of Markdown's weaknesses is like, if you want to create a table, there's still,
oh my God,
probably like 20 different ways to create a table. And if you want a table of contents, like, you know,
yeah,
God forbid that, you're really on your own. And so the little bit of additional syntactic features that we got out of ASCII doc was kind of why for complex documents, we want to move there, you know, like easy, knowing that there's easy ways to link between different sections or other things or kind of a bunch of the other features. And, you know, there's a bunch of features we didn't even use back then that now some our colleagues like Ben Knacker is using in the OXQL RFD, so he could easily do callouts or other things. So I found it to be a easy to get something basic that looks pretty good, and then if you need to go complex, you had that capability. Whereas with Markdown, it was, you know, you were kind of constrained by the Markdown renderer. And no two renderers were going to do it the same way.
Yes, Markdown is really frustrating in a lot of ways. And especially if you want to do anything sophisticated or you need things like, you know, footnotes and you want to cross-reference and all these things, it's really not good. I had kind of assumed, I didn't realize that ASCII doc, I thought ASCII doc, well, obviously because I was the last to get the memo on, like, you're the only one doing it in Markdown. So as far as I was concerned, everyone was doing an ASCII doc the world over. So I don't think I realized that ASCII doc and Chris was saying also that he'd not heard of ASCII doc until coming to Oxide. So I guess that's a little more, the irony of ASCII doc is that the documentation for ASCII doc is not great. I do find that, and Robert, I can't imagine that ChatGPT is very helpful on ASCII doc. Like, I want to be able to render this as, just like, because I feel like some of the stuff in ASCII doc is a little, It's been nice to be able to use ChatGPT for AsciiDoc, I'd like to say. No, I'm just being on brand to get LLMs into every episode. You know,
totally. There we go. Ring that bell.
Exactly. So I didn't realize that Alex had kind of discovered AsciiDoc. And Robert, do you use AsciiDoc PDF to render locally? How do you render locally?
I just always used AsciiDoc and just pulled up the HTML file and just used that. And it was pretty good. Yeah. Like it had default CSS too, which just meant you could like use it and toss a document somewhere and people could see it. And it looked fine on both mobile and, you know, not mobile, which was really nice as someone who doesn't want to think about CSS.
Right. So it should be said also, and Robert, now is as good a time as any. So we have, I created RFD 510 yesterday. So we have, perhaps there are more than 510 now. So I might have created one in the meantime, but we've got over 500 RFDs at Oxide. Adam, you had on an earlier episode had guessed that we must have millions of words. Did you do this, by the way? Have you already done this?
I haven't looked at the numbers for like years, but even then,
okay,
it was overwhelming.
Yeah. So we do have, there's 1.4 million words. And I did look at I went through everybody who has kind of contributed to RFD and just looked at the authors field. Didn't do anything more kind of sophisticated than that. And to see, in other words, like giving everyone full credit for any RFD that they're on the authors for. And of the 1.4 million words across all RFDs, Robert, you have contributed over 364,000 words. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing and profoundly unsurprising.
Also terrifying.
And Robert has been, so part of the reason, Robert, obviously you are our most prolific RFD writer. Not that we want to, you know, just insert our discussion about the peril of engineering metrics and that it is the cultural idiosyncrasies episode, but we're not trying to measure RFDs by the pound here, but I did think it was interesting and it was revealing. The other thing that Adam was really interesting to me was that was just eye-opening. It wasn't hugely surprising, I guess. The person at Oxide who has contributed with the most number of collaborators on different RFDs, who's collaborated with the most number of people on RFDs. Do you know who this might be?
I'm going to guess myself.
You are absolutely right. It is like you by far. And this is one of these things, like I didn't, you know, I'm not surprised, but I'm also like, I was actually surprised about how much it stood out. And it's because you have also like really encouraged a bunch of people to write RFDs or started RFDs it's just like, I thought it was interesting. I mean, it showed one of your kind of great strengths in terms of cross-pollinating in the organization.
Some of that was learned from what we had done at Delphix, which was that maybe you weren't allowed, but you were certainly highly encouraged to have a co-author. We kind of didn't want solo authors and things. And part of the reason for that was we thought it made for stronger documents. We thought that, you know, even if it was somebody's, you know, deep held idea, the having a co-author to walk them through it and convince them of it and get them on board would strengthen the quality of the document. So I'm sure many of my collaborators on those RFDs would also hasten to point out that I like to do, you know, a half-assed job and then leave the rest to them. But I prefer to think of it as cross-pollination as well.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we're going to focus on that. But I thought that was ranging. So, I mean, both of you have, in different aspects, have interacted with the system a lot. And so, you know, Robert, you have written more AsciiDoc than any of us. So we've written a lot of AsciiDoc. I would say that the entire collection of Shakespeare is about 800,000 words. So, Robert, you're getting there. What will Shakespeare keep an eye on your rearview mirror? Robert's coming for you.
So I would also say, folks who are wondering, like, when someone joins Oxide, Like, how do you, like, then what? Like, do you just spend the first 3 years reading? Good question. I think, and Brian, you probably have the data on this. I feel like we're on escape velocity. Like, I feel like it is impossible for me to read every RFD that is being produced unless I, even if I dedicated like all my time, all my work time to just reading the new contents of RFDs.
Absolutely. And because we are, you know, very writing intensive culture, we are adding people. People are, we've added some very prolific writers. And yes, it is absolutely. And it's like, that shouldn't be the goal, right? You don't want to actually like have to read every line of every RFD. Okay. So yeah. This gets us to, because I want to get to the very important bits here that we have extended, because this is where we get to Ben's work and Augustus' work, Crespo's work. So this was, you know, we start Oxide. We know, most of us know that ASCII doc is the right answer. One of us feels that they are still doing it in Markdown. So we solved that problem. I think it was in the first year, Adam, when we had the intervention, the Markdown intervention.
Well, for what it's worth, I had not heard of ASCII doc before joining Oxide. So I had to become a convert in a hurry.
Right. Okay. So you know, ASCII doc has been good for us, I would say, broadly speaking.
Totally.
Other than being, I guess, more unique to us than I realized. The one of the things that we started doing early on, I mean, very early on, actually, the earliest days, because we have, it's just like we're on the name of the podcast now, Oxide and Friends, comes from actually our initial friends of Oxide. So when we started the company, we had a bunch of folks who had, and Adam, you were one of the initial like friends of Oxide, right? Where before you worked here, you were a friend of Oxide. We had just people that we'd worked with, that we'd known, that we wanted to be transparent about what we're building to get their perspective on. So we added them to that GitHub repo so they could see actually all of the RFDs. So the GitHub repo is a private repo that has all of these ASCII doc, all of these documents in it. The important change that we made from Joyent is the way we did discussions, which is, it's a little wonky, but it's better than it was at Joyent by a mile, which is we use the fact that GitHub, that PRs are actually better than issues for discussions. I mean, the GitHub PRs have got issues with them for sure, or they got challenges in terms of using them, but we use PRs to discuss an RFD. Which at least allows people to give kind of line by line feedback. It's nowhere near as good as Google Doc comments, for example, but it could be worse.
Yeah, it's not bad. It doesn't get in the way, I don't think.
I don't think it gets in the way. I think it is, you know, I think that there's some challenges, but I think it's broadly, again, it was like way better than, certainly at Joyent, we didn't have discussion that we should have had because it was mechanically so difficult. So kind of solved that problem, I feel.
On Google Docs, one of the, I mean, huge downsides is like you can have a great discussion in a comment or whatever, and someone closes that comment and it's like gone forever. And I think one of the benefits of the GitHub history is like, it's not gone forever. It's all there. Just hard to find.
Yeah, I do like it. I wish those comments were themselves under kind of Git management, but which would be kind of, that'd be asking GitHub to go to be one step too useful. But I do like the fact that they're there, and they also don't get in the way of reading the doc, which I think is also important because, you know, somebody like, you know, not all those, you know, their comments like, okay, yeah, I got considered this or whatever, and I'm going to close it. I'm resolving it, but I want you to be able to still see that there's a comment here. Maybe someone else can come along later and have the same comment or what have you. But yeah, great. So we do that with branches, and then we put some automation around that where, you know, you could, the RFDs have got different states and they can be in kind of ideation was an early, that was a state that we added, Adam, if I recall. We wanted something that was kind of earlier than kind of discussion state. We're just like, I truly do. I've got just like no idea what this is a dream I had.
Yeah. I mean, this actually started, I think the first one was the out-of-box experience stuff, which we kept on stumbling into. Oh, yeah, when we first do the installation, we've got to do this. Or when we do the install, we got to remember to bring, you know, the hex screwdriver or whatever. And we just wanted somewhere to dump this stuff down. I mean, in part because RFDs are the only durable place we have for this stuff.
Right. And so, that's right. I mean, and RFDs are the way we kind of are, maybe you can argue, beginning to abuse it a little bit, but the system was flexible enough that it could be extended that way and adding adding ideation was pretty easy. So that worked out pretty well. Then it was great to be able to take the repository and add someone as add their GitHub ID as a collaborator on the repository. And then that became kind of part of what one, though, like it was just great to be able to do that to get people's perspectives on things. But then secondly, we would use that as part of the hiring process. So part of the hiring process was after we reviewed someone's materials and we're like, okay, we're interested in this person, we would add them to the RFDs so they could see all of the RFDs. And this was a really important step. It was really important for us to be able to show people all of our documentation about how we were building this thing to give them a much more concrete idea of what we were doing technically. And what I would tell people is when you get into these RFDs and you're going to, you know, some of them are extraordinary. Some of them are not even correct any longer. Some of them are, you know, there's this huge, you know, huge spectrum of quality and so on. But as you read these RFDs, you will begin to feel that you want to work for Oxide more or less, but not the same. That's what I would tell people. And I think it was really, really important. And we had, obviously, because by the time we're kind of advancing people's after the materials, we talked about this with on our episode on hiring with Gergay, but this is all happening after we have decided like to kind of pull someone into conversations and we want them to kind of understand what we're building at Oxide. We did have people in there, and I had one person in particular who was like, I thought I really wanted to work for Oxide, but, and I had pointed them to, you know, some pretty gnarly RFDs, and it's like, I'd read some of these RFDs and like, I'm kind of more interested in the idea of working for Oxide than I am working for Oxide, which I thought was very helpful. Right.
Yeah. It's like, that's great. But much better for everyone that they figured out before they joined rather than 3 months in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Robert, you should take this as praise, but it was absolutely one of your RFDs that actually was the clarifying RFD. You're just like, oh, because I think people don't like the amount of detail. You're like, oh my God, there is so much detail here. It's like, yes, yes, there's a lot of detail. It's very, very detailed to actually go. So that was great. The problem that we had, or that I had, was there wasn't a good way to, well, we had a couple of big problems. One, there was no way to search RFDs, which was becoming like, started off like not great and was becoming really, really, really problematic. And then there was no way to share individual RFDs. And other than like rendering them as PDFs and sending them, which I did plenty, but it's like, that's not great. And this may be a good time to get you and kind of David in here and Augustus in terms of like, this is the kind of the RFD system that you kind of come upon is us kind of dealing with sticks and stones and GitHub. And what is the origin of the RFD site? Because I'm trying to remember, like, how far did that date back, first of all? That dates back, I think, a while.
Yeah, there was an initial version that already existed when I joined. And it was just a list of kind of RFDs that were rendered. I think at that point a lot of people were looking at RFDs directly on GitHub. I guess due to the deficiencies of the site. And then I don't remember exactly when we kind of relaunched sort of the version that we have now. We've built upon it since. But then we kind of incrementally added things like the full text search. That was a huge pain point for me. I forgot what kind of command it was. There was some kind of grep thing, which would take minutes to search the. it wasn't a great process. And now we have full text search. We're using some library that indexes kind of all the RFDs and searches, which I think is a good. That's kind of super useful. To your point earlier, we're sort of at an inflection point where there's so much in there that even full text search doesn't necessarily get you everything that you need. and I not to. Yeah, and someone's already mentioned LLM, so I think I'm free to do it without kind of.
Yeah, you don't have to feel like you're breaking
accuses this. I'm not being accused of a shill, but I think there's on the roadmap. There's room for something that kind of summarizes all RFDs and at the very least tells you where to look. And let's say you're joining Oxide. There are a bunch of RFDs that everyone should read, but for most people, like there's a smaller group which are kind of really pertinent to their work. And I think use something like that to generate reading lists for people that join, and they don't feel like they're just losing their mind, like drinking from the fires, trying to read everything to get up and running.
Totally. When I think so, a couple of things the inability to search RFDs was extremely painful. It was also, it's made even more painful because the great thing about using PRs for discussion is that you get GitHub's features. The downside of that is it means that like the actual repo itself, that is to say like the main branch, only contains RFDs that have been published. They don't have the ones that are in discussion. So you have to like search every branch. And so I had this thing, RFD grab, that you're referring to, Ben, that was taking minutes. But it was like, it was minutes, but it was actually like delivering penicillin. So it was really, you know, it was like, oh my God, thank God we got some way. We were using Lucene grep. LM grep is what we were using Lucene. And it was very helpful, but it was also like its performance would vary a lot. It would take minutes. It was really, really painful. And in particular, like it was so needed. And because I remember like getting Steve Tuck set up with RFD grep because he needed it desperately. I'm like, got to have a better way to do this. So I can't remember when you did the full text search on the RFD site, but that demo Friday was like a religious experience it was like that affected everyone at Oxide to be able like, oh my God, I could just go there and search all the RFDs, like clean water. Thank God.
Yeah. And it's such an obvious thing, but then kind of afterwards it felt kind of magical. There's a few of those moments where I kind of added something and it transformed at least the way I use the RFD site. Full text search is one of them. Getting kind of discussion in line on the RFD site was
okay. So describe that, because that was, I totally agree. So now we've got the RFD site, and we've got the RFD site, which also like looks great, which is very helpful. You are doing, so tell me how you're rendering the ASCII doc, because that was a big piece of this. So you got to go render the ASCII doc.
There's been a few versions of it, and I think like I kind of have a love-hate relationship with ASCII doc. I think it's amazing because it is so versatile, and it is so painful because it's so versatile. You can create so much, and like I'm aware of a small subset of features. The RFD site is the place to check like a renderer for ASCII doc, because you will see every version of in any way which you can use ASCII doc has been used on the RFD site, and it will get kind of an issue now and again. And I'm just baffled because I'm like, I didn't even know this was possible.
Yeah, sorry. I think I was definitely a recent version of that where I was definitely like using block quotes and attributed quotes and
Brian, that's basic. You should see the stuff people are doing. It's really rewarding doing this stuff, but there's a balance, right? I don't want to spend all of my time working on like an ASCII doc renderer and kind of the styling for this thing if it's just kind of used in one place. And I think one way in which we have worked around that is we've embraced ASCII doc. I'm using ASCII doc for everything. So our doc site is built on ASCII doc, our RFD site, and the blog posts on the marketing site are all ASCII doc. So what we have there is, and that in tandem with our design system, our colors, our typography, all of that stuff is unified across both kind of product and internal sites, which is unusual because usually you have your product design system and then you have some other designers who kind of are off like playing in the sandpit, doing like the website, doing whatever they want. I'm doing both, so I can have a unified system. And what it means is when I do the styling for the kind of RFD site, it's shared across all these places. So I can justify spending a bit of time on these things because it's so useful.
I feel like the emperor's new clothes, though, in because we do use ASCII doc everywhere, I just assumed ASCII doc is like ubiquitous everywhere. And it's like,
I've never heard of it. No.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no one's ever heard of it.
Brian, this reminds me of when you walked up to a friend of ours who worked at Slack, and you're like, hey, so these Element guys must be really nipping at your heels. And they're like, I literally have no idea who Element is. Like, what are you saying, Element?
Element, you know, formerly known as Riot. Like,
you know, the chat system that I assume everyone uses. It's like, no, it's just us.
Look, I just assumed, because as Ben, as you point out, that I'm realizing that part of the reason I thought ASCII-Doc was ubiquitous is because it is ubiquitous at Oxide, but it is ubiquitous in Oxide because you made it ubiquitous.
Don't blame me. Don't blame me for that.
No. I think it's great. I do think it's great. I think it's terrific. I think it is so much better than Markdown. I think it's great. And it, like the blogs and so on are all on ASCII-Doc.
So really briefly on the stuff that we've made for it. So there is my main issue of ASCII-Doc is that there is no kind of native like Rust or JavaScript library for processing it. There is a JavaScript library which is transpiled from Ruby. Making changes or seeing how it works under the hood is sometimes challenging. And then there's a bunch of assumptions on the way that it works. Like it assumes that you're going to process a whole ASCII document in one go, top to bottom, right?
Right.
Which makes sense if you're processing it locally. In my case, I kind of worked on a React renderer for ASCII-Doc. And essentially what I do is I take this ASCII-Doc tree and I work through it and I render kind of each part as kind of React components. If you're not doing that, you have to create like a renderer where you're returning a string. So you want to render an image, you return a string and you kind of drop in, you're accessing attributes and you're kind of swapping stuff in and out. Which isn't ideal, especially if you want to do some more interactive things like our images. It gets kind of complicated because we're using signed images that come from GCP. We want a little light box. There's some other kind of features where if you want any kind of interactivity, that model doesn't work. So I wrote a React renderer for that. But then you kind of, React doesn't run once top to bottom and you have issues. Okay, the big issue that I spent way too long on was every time you render a piece of content with a footnote in it, it assumes that it's a new footnote. So every time it's re-rendering that piece of text with a footnote, your number of footnotes is increasing at the bottom of the page. So those things are kind of challenging. And we found ways around them. And I think like each one of these versions is motivated by kind of a piece of functionality that we want. So one thing I've been playing with recently is creating this intermediary format for ASCII-Doc. So I go through the tree, I process it, I turn it into like a JSON object that can be passed easily from the server to the client. And that means that you can kind of pre-process it on the server. And then you're not shipping like this 2 megabyte client library just to handle it on the front end. The reason why that's important is, let's say we're in the console, and this is a big aspiration of Robert's, is if we want documentation that exists within the console, it doesn't feel justified to ship this big ASCII-Doc.js library in the console because that kind of is a bit bloated. But I think I'm kind of working on experiments so that we can have dynamic documentation. Maybe if you're kind of working on repairs and kind of swapping components, then we have that without needing to do all this stuff. So yeah, it's interesting. It's a bit of a challenge at times, but the versatility is the thing that's great and the thing that kind of trips me up sometimes.
Well, and just the fact that we also use this for the documentation is so great. And then we've been able to make the documentation site that's available to the public. If you want to, you can see all of the Oxide documentation, which is great. And then we're able to kind of cross-link that with the console. There's a bunch of things we can do there. And then also it looks gorgeous. Can you talk about the GitHub integration a little bit? Because that's been a huge, that's been hugely valuable to get those discussions. That was another demo Friday that I just think just like left people, you know, weeping with joy.
Yeah,
the ability to see comments on the RP site.
That was I think there's something around like the accessibility of this stuff. Oxide has always been like really kind of engineering driven. And engineers are really familiar with GitHub, and that's really easy for them. But I think if you want this process to be used outside in kind of sales and operations and design, then really you have to make this stuff as accessible as possible. And we're not there. And I think we're kind of working towards it. But getting GitHub discussions directly into the RFD site felt like a big step towards that. What's nice about the GitHub kind of discussions is you're leaving line comments, right? And one great feature about AsciiDuck is that you can trace, you can kind of given a line in an AsciiDuck document, you can get the rendered document, you can get the associated line number. So what it meant is we could query the GitHub API, get all of the comments, kind of collect them in kind of a format that can be kind of rendered easily, which is pretty kind of tricky to begin with. And then we go through sort of line by line and we position them alongside the content directly, if they're still relevant. And then we have this sidebar, which kind of, where you can see the kind of full canonical discussion and you can kind of jump to the relevant part. But yeah, just that little bit of kind of being able to associate the original document with the rendered document was enough that we could pull from the API people's avatars, and we can kind of have this module that people can click on and view. And that, I think my kind of first experiment was this super ugly way of getting a little avatar alongside the text, but that felt kind of a real kind of a huge improvement.
A huge improvement. And this is a good segue to the kind of the RFD database that kind of fronts this thing, I think, because I assume that's hitting the database that is fronting it and not actually GitHub directly, but I actually don't know the answer to that. Augustus, it'd be a good opportunity to get your work in here.
Yeah. That does actually talk to GitHub directly at the moment.
That's really, wow.
Yep. Hopefully not for long. Our goal was to model it in the front end, see how people liked it.
Yeah.
And then once we have a good idea, then we port it back down to the back end. And one of the complicated bits though is, we have this back end processing bit so that we don't have to go to GitHub to pull data, like all the static content from the RFDs and the images and all of that. The problem though is that database, we want to talk about sort of revisions of RFDs. And this is something we did recently, but we currently only expose the currently latest version of RFD, but we have a database of every commit processed. So eventually you could go back in time on the RFD site. And then the idea is, how do you tie comments into revisions, and what's that mean? Comments on a specific revision, how do you then pull them all together? So in the process, but as Chris said, we're building GitHub.
Because one of the reasons to do that is the longer the discussion, the longer the response takes. So I think there's one RFD, something to do with time. Why would that have lots of comments? RFD 34.
Time is...
And it crashes every time, I think, because it basically time. Oh no! Oh wow! This worked. What a miracle! But essentially, the more comments, the longer the response takes. And so I think there's some kind of funkiness in the GitHub API, which is, we do have something where essentially we serve the regular rendered version, David might want to talk a little bit about this, but there's a Remix feature. Remix is the framework that we're using to do all this, where you can stream. You can stream data from the server later on. So what we do is we give you the main document first, because that's important. And then later on, asynchronously, we give you the comments, just so that's not kind of holding up the
okay. That is the reason I had assumed that those were coming out of a front end database is because it was so snappy. So that's why it's so snappy. Because you're
rendered bit, yeah. And then your kind of mileage may vary on the actual kind of the GitHub portion.
So when you first load the page, you get the spinner for the comments, because it's fetching those in the background. So that's why it feels fast. So it's kind of fake fast.
It is fake. I get totally faked out by it, though. I'm not looking at the spinner. I'm generally looking at the rendered content. So that's definitely worked. It also should be said that it just, the rendered content looks gorgeous. And obviously, Ben, this is, I mean, you've made sure that everything at Oxide looks gorgeous or faces your ire. It just looks great. It also looks great on the phone, which I think is really important. Because I think that I think folks are reading more and more RFDs on a mobile device, right? So, because Augustus, the other reason that the having the front end database has been really, really important is for the visibility for RFDs. Could you describe maybe some of the problems we had with adding increasing number of folks to this Friends of Oxide group, because this GitHub group was getting larger and larger and larger. And they all, I think, all had to be like outside collaborators with our organization, I think, if I recall correctly.
That is absolutely correct. So if you don't know, when you have a private repo and you add an outside collaborator, you start paying for it. So you start racking up pretty big GitHub bills around that, as well as it's just a hard list to maintain. And like understanding who still wants to be on that list. So, and also it meant that we have to give full access to every RFD to everybody. We don't have anybody to curate that. And we had some workarounds in place, but like they're very, we have some static config files that list like a handful of RFDs and this like subset of people get them. We had no real good permissioning system around it. And that was one of the main reasons to rewrite that database and backend processing was we needed to model RFD access around actual like permission sets. So being able to grant things all the way down to you have access to a specific RFD or maybe even have access to a specific RFD and the discussion for that RFD within the RFD site itself.
And this is extraordinarily important. I mean, this is, I think, you know, I think the full text search was game changing. The rendering was game changing. And I feel that the fine grained permissions are totally game changing for RFDs because we really needed to be able, the reason I think it's so game changing is because it allowed us to much more easily, well, one, we can make our individual RFDs public, which was a real problem. When did we first have the ability to do that?
So we had this weird, I'd have to look at the actual date. We had a weird workaround prior to the permissions where you could technically mark things as public that we did for like one or two, but it wasn't until we actually launched the new RFD API, which was, I don't know, sometime this past year, to actually like flag them.
There was a file with an array of RFDs.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then it was initially it was semi-public, right? So you had to anyone could log in with like any GitHub login, I think. And then I think David really pushed to get to kind of have it so anyone could access the public RFDs without logging in, which was I think another kind of big improvement.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out. There's a difference between public, as in you could sign in and see stuff, versus now you can actually just go to the URL and you can actually just search the things that are public, as in they're actually public, not this fake behind a login public.
And this has been, I think, huge. Because I feel, especially kind of where we are in the past year, having brought this product to market, and now there are more and more aspects of this that we want to share with everybody. We want to share with all of our customers, and we want to share with everyone to see. And I feel like there are, you know, it's just kind of amazing that we've only been able to do this in the last year. And I feel like I do this all the time. We did this, obviously, I mean, the last episode as was talking about an RFD that was made public, right? So in terms of Wither Cockroach DB and 508, but I feel like it was really, really important to have that fine grain control and to be able to have like groups as well. So you can say like, okay, this, because I think we've got a group for our contract manufacturer, for example, where we want them to be able to see everything about a certain number of RFDs that are not public is extremely helpful.
Yeah. I know it was less than a year because it was at last time when we all met up at the office. That's when I demoed the barely working API that was just tied together with string. And honestly, so all of this permissions and group stuff is, so the RFD site was the first test of this, but that's actually now, that's been factored out of the RFD site, out of the RFD API, and now sort of powers a lot of our internal permission, application permissions. And now the API, RFD API gets updates now from the stuff we're doing throughout the rest of the company.
Yeah, that is great. And then, so, all right, so that was in, before we met up in October. And then I know that I was with, I was out in New York in November talking to someone who had seen the RFD site, and they're like, how can I get a hold of that? Because I think a lot of, I mean, I feel like every time we have an RFD, a public RFD that is on Hacker News or is getting discussed, someone is always like, hey, can someone explain to me how this system works and how can I use it? Because we, there's a lot of interest in it. Do you want to talk about a little bit of and the kind of the open sourcing of the RFD site and of the RFD API?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would say the RFD, part of the, our goal with the RFD API was planned from the beginning to be open source. So part of it was also just sort of detangling from anything that was like Oxide specific and trying to make it a more abstract system. The RFD site, I'll let Ben speak to that one, was, I think, more of a challenge.
The RFD site is kind of fake open source in that it's all...
a message to our community.
Well, we've got the BSL language license on it. No, it's...
You may not have any RFD that implies that you're building a computer. Other than that, you can use it as much as you want. Just can't, you know.
Yeah, even Oxide.
Right, too real.
Because it's still the RFD API is much more is much broader. I think anyone can use that pretty easily. The RFD site is very Oxide at the moment. Like it has all our styling, all of that. It's kind of direct in the repo. I think eventually it might be nice to have something a little bit more
the CSS is specific to us, but someone could take this and get it working for themselves, correct? I mean, it feels like they could.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. And wouldn't they love to have our beautiful styling too?
Everyone should be so lucky to have this gorgeous styling.
Just swap the logo, easy peasy.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hey, it's trademark now. Don't touch.
Yeah, exactly. That's Oxide TM to you. Java technology, please, TM. But it's the so in terms of like being able to take it, we've got all of the elements that someone could do to go. And what would be kind of some of the ways in which someone could use this stuff? How would one get started if you wanted to kind of see what it would be like to use this?
Yeah, in terms of the API, is like probably a decent place to start. It's also built on top of other Oxide stuff like Dropshot and Progenitor. So there's like a built-in CLI that you get out of it for free, which is really nice. Need like a GitHub repo.
Adam, you're a proud papa, you and Dave on Progenitor and Dropshot. You just love it.
So super proud. I would say that Augustus is the only, to my knowledge, other consumer of the Progenitor-generated CLIs, which are pretty gross. So I feel proud and filled with shame.
So Augustus, when I'm using the RFD CLI, that is a progenitor generated CLI.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's it. You should feel no shame, Adam.
Oh, it's
you
awesome. Know that there's a function in there whose name is XXX. So there is some reason for shame. I am very proud.
Okay, all right. So feel shame on that. But I use that CLI a lot. I mean, that's what I make great use of the RFD CLI. So that's all auto generated. That's amazing.
So any shame, right? The end user doesn't see any of that, though. So
it's perfect.
Perfect technology.
Internal shame.
The only real assumption, it makes a couple assumptions, maybe around if you read RFD1, actually, is what a lot of this is modeled on top of. So it does make some assumptions about how we run RFDs, like what the states are, what they mean.
Right.
But in theory, you can point this at a repo. I've been working on trying to getting a setup guide to be a little bit cleaner. Benji did ran this himself and sent me a whole bunch of really helpful notes on how painful it was. So there is some work to be done there, but it makes some assumptions around your using ASCII Doctor, some of our use cases around like mermaid diagrams that require some installation, but realistically, it should be pretty straightforward to run. And what you get out is essentially a nice database, or technically it runs on Postgres. So you have a nice Postgres database of all of your RFD contents that you can then really do whatever you want with. We happen to render them as an RFD site then.
I wanted to ask Augustus something. So something I'm not sure if we've really gone into is like how it works in the GitHub repo. So the whole thing is, you know, when you make a PR, creating an RFD, that is a branch with that's named with the RFD number. And so when the RFD site is scanning the repo for all, I mean, when the API is scanning the repo for all the RFDs, it's scanning all the branches. You know, you can't just look at main. I'm curious how coupled the RFD API is to like that model, because I could, you know, we run into some friction with that. Even as nice as it is to have, you know, PRs as the site of discussion, you could imagine not wanting to do it that way. So how coupled is it to that?
Right. So it's fairly coupled to that right now. Essentially, we have these. So if I go into a little bit, the processor works on this concept of jobs where we scan a repo or we accept webhooks from GitHub to generate jobs that are going to then look at a specific commit and look within like that directory structure. So it's less coupled to the branching model and more coupled to the document structure. So we have a directory that has RFDs, then you have a RFD number, and then a RFD document. Outside of that, you could write a separate scanner that, you know, looks at branches and does make some other determination to create a new job that says, okay, here's where my RFD is located. I need you to go do some processing on it, and that processing then pulls that content down into the database. It'll do things like generating PRs if you need them. Like when a RFD goes into discussion, we generate a PR on the GitHub repo for people to start discussing it. Things like closing them out or updating things like idle states. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that automation has made it, because the branching bit has been great for discussion, but I think across my thing's point you're going to get to is it can feel a bit clumsy at times for the authors of RFDs. And I feel like the automation there has really helped a bunch. And I think that given all that, I mean, I could see why someone might want to do it a different way, but there's a lot of strength to the model we've got. We're just kind of getting GitHub. It's using GitHub for its strength without being, while still having a canonical repo that has everything in it.
Yeah, I think, and especially from like the machine side of it, it makes a lot of sense. And Benji mentioned this earlier of part of our goal is then how do we, as engineers, I think it's fairly comfortable. We use GitHub all the time. But how do we then bring that to everybody and make everybody comfortable with it? And I don't think the plan is to like force everyone to, you have to like learn GitHub and be super comfortable with it. So understanding how does like, what's it look like for the RFD API to make a new RFD for you if you just give it a title or
right
when you want to edit content?
We're doing it kind of incrementally as well, and that's the beauty of working on something on a platform like GitHub is you can use the RFD API package, use GitHub, and you don't even need a front end, at least initially. You don't need to worry about that. And then eventually you can kind of add more as and when. But yeah, the accessibility thing I think is big. Augustus added an endpoint so that you could you can create RFDs from the API. And so yeah, I'm kind of working on a way that people can just create a new RFD from the website directly. And then a few months ago, I was working on a little experiment where it was a live ASCII doc editor. Where you could kind of create and share notes, maybe before they're an RFD, and or notes that aren't going to be an RFD at all. And within that, because of the API, had an option where you could then turn you could turn a note into an RFD and it would kind of hit the API and it would kind of take all of that content and throw it in an RFD. So I think that's what we're working towards eventually. Some basic authoring. There's a line though. It's really tempting to try and recreate GitHub and Google Docs. I think we've got enough on our plate, but it's tempting to do for sure. I found personally that kind of working on internal tooling is really beneficial. Like we get a lot out of it, especially as we get bigger, and we really benefit when more people can contribute to RFDs, especially engineers.
The fact that we're standardized on all these tools means that it's sort of this flywheel, you know, because we use, for example, like you said, the ASCII doc rendering stuff on the doc site. It's sort of the investments that we make in internal tooling also go into the product itself, which is really a good way to be.
Yes. And I think it gets to, so folks in the chat are asking about Notion. I've not actually used Notion. Preston, it sounds like you have. I would say that my concern about Notion, I would say I've got like an Evernote concern with Notion. Or any other, and this is part of the challenge here, is that like using any kind of paid service here is really problematic because this is so important to us that it's really hard for us to accept restrictions on how things are used. And in particular, like a hard constraint on the problem is we have to have a Git repository that has the RFDs in it. Like that has to be where they live canonically. They cannot live canonically anywhere else. So that's extremely important. I think it's really important, the ASCII doc element of it, now that I understand that only Oxide is using ASCII doc. That becomes really important. Benji, you're mentioning in the chat, the versioning, that is extremely important. And I just think that this is one of these things where we really need to control every aspect of our fate. We would love to, I think, integrate with other, you know, we're not, I think, you know, if we could find kind of better ways to do pieces of this, but we really need to control our own fate. And I think that like, that is not unusual for us. I think engineering organizations need to control their own fate in terms of the actual artifacts they're creating. And this is a really important artifact that we're creating. This is, as you were saying, Adam, this is like one of our most enduring artifacts, yeah. Our RFD. So, it's right up there with the source code, honestly. I mean, it's, don't make me pick. They're both very, very important.
A while ago, I stumbled onto a phrase of owning your strategic weirdness. And I would have said like, RFDs are a thing that we could have outsourced. But like, RFDs turned out to be our strategic weirdness. Like we didn't even know what they were going to be. Like we didn't envision them as like a way to communicate with the public, for example, as you mentioned that we did around.
I knew that was going to be a problem. It was a problem at Joint too. I knew we were going to want a way of communicating with the public. I just had much worse ideas of how it would be done.
Yeah. I mean, but I just mean like if we had used some off the shelf tool, it might've been great, but then we would have struggled to do some of these other things with it. And I mean, the work that our colleagues who have just been talking about it, like it's not a small amount of work. Also been hugely valuable. And I'm not sure we would have made some different decision even knowing how much work was going to be involved.
Yeah, I know. I don't think so either. In fact, quite the contrary. I think with all these things, I now cannot imagine doing. It's like, it's been a lot of work. I mean, not to discount that, but it's also like we're not licensing any proprietary software here. We're not paying for service. In fact, quite the contrary. The work that Augustus was doing was necessary for us to prune our GitHub collaborators because that was costing us money. Like this actually saved us a bunch of money so the degree we were using a service, we were using too much of it. And we were, I mean, in fact, actually, Adam, I think you kind of need to look no further than GitHub where we were, just for all the things that Augustus was mentioning about the groups and having to add collaborators, but then the collaborator, we were already kind of breaking GitHub. And we've, you know, left GitHub as the kind of the canonical repository for comments. But I think the direction we'd want is to use less of that. I think you could easily envision, I mean, God, if I know that Crespo was defending Ben's time by saying under no condition will we allow you to add comments on the RFD site. But if you were to add that, you could
transform it.
You could see comments going into a Git repo and then us not using GitHub for comments on that.
Totally. It'd be amazing.
And then I think that, like, I also think that a strength of us doing this, by the way, is that we've been able to open source it. So yeah. This is now, like, we have generated something that, I feel that, like, you know, as we kind of gone through our careers, like, we've added more and more wisdom into the system. And it now reflects a bunch of wisdom that we can all carry forward. Even folks that are outside of Oxide can actually leverage this. One thing I did want to talk about, because it did come up in discussion online, where people were curious about how we use RFDs to resolve conflict. And that's not exactly their question. I'm rephrasing it a little bit, but, like, how do you deal with conflict in an RFD? How do you deal with where, you know, like, the comment was kind of like, hey, we experimented with it, but it just became too much of a lightning rod. And I would say that, like, RFDs do not solve your organizational problems, right? They don't necessarily resolve those things. And, you know, we have had RFDs that become lightning rods. It's not good. I think it's better than, I would say these are lightning rods that are lightning rods anyway. I think, as we alluded to on the cultural idiosyncrasies episode, of course, it's like the chat system, which we've already, like, run the bus several times here. It's like, chat is what will rip Oxide apart.
Absolutely.
And this is a good example where, like, and I think, Adam, you mentioned this at the time when we were talking about it, where all of these systems have got drawbacks. It's easy for everyone to have an opinion on it. The opinions get, like, kind of tribal, and it's not great. Right. And in terms of, like, it's not great in that, like, there's not an unequivocal answer. And, you know, the RFD on chat got a little hot. Maybe even a lot hot. Maybe I remember. That's not an RFD.
I'll tell you, the nice thing about it is you can also tune up for those ones that you know are going to go nowhere, which is how I've viewed the one on chat. So I've yet to read those hot comments, but now I'll go check them out.
But please don't. Please don't. It is not worth checking out the hot comments on chat. But I think that, like, you're on the one hand, you're not going to resolve that. On the other hand, it is actually helpful to have all of the, I think it's like, if you're going to have organizational conflict, let it be in writing. You know, it is very helpful to have everything, because you can actually, like, it forces people to be complete about their arguments. It's obviously,
and,
like,
and think of the lawyers. I mean, it's great for depositions, great for discovery.
Think of the lawyers. Will somebody please think of the lawyers?
But, you know, earlier on, Chad had a question about, you know, are these really requests for discussion, or are they just things that have already been discussed and decided? And very much they are requests for discussion. And they're ideas that often have one or a couple of people have seen them, and then we're casting it open to other folks. And I think, Brian, one of the things you mentioned is often that discussion happens in the GitHub comments, but it doesn't always have to happen that way. Like, as things are getting spicy or as things are not resolving, you know, sometimes people have a meeting, sometimes people have it in a live chat. You know, there are other ways of bringing discussion to determinations. So it's not, and there's not, like, one prescriptive method for doing that, or for navigating a conversation, or even for knowing the threshold for when, okay, it's time to move on. We've published the thing. We just kind of feel it out and do what feels right for each one.
Yeah. And so I do have, and I actually made it public this morning or yesterday on RFD 113, which I did write to, which is kind of how we actually make determinations. And is giving this kind of loose guidance that you're describing. I mean, this is not, you can't be overly prescriptive about how decisions are made, kind of obviously. But, you know, really talking about and kind of differentiating decisions from determinations, talking about some specific examples where, you know, how we made determinations in the past. Because it's on the one hand, there are plenty of RFDs where it's like, no, I want to throw this out here. I really want to get someone's discussion. In other cases, like, we've got, and especially if you've got an issue where we have to move quickly, often, like, okay, there's been a lot of process that's outside of RFDs, and now actually the RFD is going to pull all this together and kind of describe what we've already done a little bit. But it's actually extremely helpful to go do that, where we can actually go through the different things that we've kind of considered, which is very important. So I think that sometimes the RFD process ends up being a little bit behind the process. But I think oftentimes it's an earnest request for discussion. Yeah. There's a question about whether an RFD becomes immutable. We do have the published state, which is very valuable. I need to get more of my own things into published. That RFD 113 is not in the published state. Actually, it's funny. So just as an interesting like object lesson, RFD 113 is not in the published state. It's in the discussion state, even though it's obviously 113 and we are now at last updated in December of 2020. It's like, okay, why is it still in the discussion state? This should clearly be like published. And so I'm like, I'm going to go mark this in the published state. But there's a comment in there. Actually, our colleague Keith Wasowski left a very thoughtful comment on there that I had read, you know, in 2020, but there's some things in there. I actually want to modify this RFD a little bit before I publish it based on that single comment. And it's not like contentious. It doesn't disagree with anything here, but he's got a perspective that I want to capture in here a little bit before I moved it into the published state. So that's why that one is still in the discussion. In terms of like when, and I think, you know, Ileana is also saying that RFDs can language in discussion, which I think is like, I think is okay. I'm guilty of this too, but I think when we're moving into the published state, we're saying like, okay, this is basically like, we've kind of accepted this. It doesn't mean that it's immutable. And I think importantly, we can go back and change RFDs that have been published. We don't want to become captive to our own process in this regard. And I think by and large, we haven't been captive to the RFD. I don't think it's been incarcerating, Adam.
No, I agree. I think there have been very few RFDs that really are trying to draw a very firm line that we then feel obeisant to. Like, I think you're spot on there. That either we go back and we update it, or we create a new RFD and say, this obsoletes this old RFD, or our thinking on this has changed, or the facts have changed in these ways, and that's what changes these determinations. But I think it's been purely valuable in terms of the determination process, and then hugely valuable for looking back historically and understanding, you know, especially before we change some of these ideas, seeing that full discussion, really embracing that before we decide to go some other path.
Yeah, and then I think it's also helpful to have the abandoned state. Abandoned it is, and a chat RFD may be in the abandoned state. Just to indicate to someone, especially new to the company, like, oh, okay, like I don't need to spend a lot of time looking at this one. This was an idea that was kind of a needs improvement from the Joyent era as well, where we ended up with some RFDs that were not what we did. And then like, we need to kind of make clear, like, no, this is not, we didn't go this way. This was, we had a thoughtful discussion on or what have you, but you shouldn't view this as kind of canonical because we've abandoned it. I think the other thing I would say is that when we are getting better at is linking RFDs to one another. So you've already seen this, and especially like in the, when we were, you know, referring to Dave's RFDs last week, and you know, the 110 and 53 and kind of the RFDs that they refer to. I think that ASCII doc makes it pretty easy to link to those things and kind of footnotes and so on. But I think that being able to navigate that web becomes really important.
Yeah, totally. One of my favorite efforts that Robert undertook was to build a whole like graphical representation of the interlock of about like a couple dozen RFDs, it felt like.
Oh, yeah.
Orienting you in space. It felt like a tough thing to maintain, but man, was that helpful.
Yeah, that specifically really for the Gimlet hardware sled.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, you are here in this RFD, and this is how it relates to the other RFDs. And that was really, really important. In our next gen sled, Robert, you want to talk about how you were, because the RFD there, I've got an RFD that really is the entire architecture of that kind of next gen sled. Do you want to talk about how we're using RFDs for Cosmo?
Sure. So, I mean, I think to kind of talk about how we use RFDs for Cosmo, it helps a little bit to talk about RFDs for Gimlet along the way. So,
yeah, absolutely.
When we were developing Gimlet, I'd say, you know, this was a time when the first RFDs were written, there's maybe what? 12 of us, 15 of us. And this is before most of the EE team has started. I mean, this is.
Yes. Yeah. Like
mid 2020, maybe early. So a lot of it was us trying to separate out the specifics of, you know, what is it, what's important for socket SP3, or, you know, specifics for this particular AMD aspect versus what is it we generally want. And so there's a lot of things are split up in those early RFDs in part because of that. So, like, you know, we have something about, you know, how does hot plug, you know, what does PCIe hot plug look like? Like, what are our goals and kind of constraints? You know, right. How do we split up, you know, responsibility between different subsystems? You know, just edit broad, you know, broad core strokes. What's even the role of power monitoring? When should we do it? When shouldn't we do it? All these things. And so that kind of gives us a lot of initial foundation there. And then from there, we kind of, with Cosmo, you know, a lot of these things that we have, we, you know, we're not starting from a clean slate per se. Like, we have an existing system. There's a lot of stuff we want to reuse between that, you know. We have a large investment in Hubris and tooling and different components. You know, we have vendors that we've worked with. So we're not trying to necessarily reinvent the whole wheel there. So, you know, not everything is starting from a clean sheet again. So that kind of helps constrain it. So in there, we kind of, in the Cosmo RFD, for example, you know, we've broken up that into a bunch of different areas that different folks kind of helped collaborate on. You know, some of it was Adam and I collaborating on, you know, what is the disk drive interface that we should use? You know, there's U.2, E3S, E1S. You know, there's E1L, there's three different variants of widths and thicknesses of E3S, and even longer things. How many lanes do you want? But, like, you know, that's something there. Oh. Where, so, like, the, sorry.
No, I just, you're reminding me of, I think, is it 101, Much Ado About Optics?
There's one of those is up there. But that's that. Whereas, like, we have a very different question, you know, where, like, Nathaniel, who's kind of lurking, I think, on this, you know, was dealing with how do we kind of rethink about how we're doing parts of what the FPGA's role is as we want to add different features around eSpy and other things. And so, you know, that's different places where different folks kind of collaborated with, you know, with different takes on it. And then, you know, we have an appendix, you know, to your point of things that you've abandoned. You know, there was a bunch of early ideas that we kind of ended up not rolling with this time. But we have a note of what they were and then why we didn't, because a lot of them weren't, you know, they're still good ideas, but just didn't make sense based on certain circumstances. So it's helpful there. And I think then the other bit that we've tried to do here is that, you know, to the folks' points, you know, throughout this, it's like, hey, how do I ramp up when there's, you know, a million words, million and a half words of context of this, and I don't know what it is. And it's like, okay, well, there's, you know, if you're just starting, you kind of have a determination section or even a small overview presentation that someone's given, and the specifics of why don't necessarily matter. But if you do, but later on, if you come back to this, you do have specifics of why. And that's helpful for, you don't, that's not helpful when you're trying to ramp up. But if you're trying to come back to, like, why did we make this decision? What were the different trade-offs? Would we do something different? At least you have some of the context of what were the different things that went into it.
Oh, it is extraordinarily helpful. And it was 112 as Much Ado About Optics, Robert. We'll need to look to see if there's any, if there's no NDA material in there. I want to make that one public just because that, have you read 112, Adam? Cause you're like, I don't know, optics, how complicated can it be? It's like, okay.
No, I haven't.
Oh my God. I mean, this is one of these, and I feel like there are many RFDs that are in this category where this thing will take you to absolute crush depth. on the optics and how complicated it is. And I mean, Robert, you've done this many, many, many times where it is so helpful to have the entirety of the depth of our thinking in an RFD, because as you say, it's like, you know, you may look at that and, I mean, God, there've been so many RFDs that I read once. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I don't know. Makes sense. And then, like, later, due to, you know, change in circumstances, I'm now reading this very closely. Maybe it's because I'm implementing, or maybe it's because we're about to have a call with, you know, with a partner where this part is misbehaving, or maybe we're having a call with an investor or having a call with a user. When it's like, we're having a conversation, we're like, I need to ramp up on everything we know about optics. I need to know in the next, like, 45 minutes. It's like good news. And you can go actually get to the entire depth of our thinking. And I think that this is where the written artifacts are so important for scaling an organization, because it allows, I mean, Robert, with so much of your thinking written down, people can go read your thinking before they need to like ask you a follow-up question, right? And that is just extraordinarily important. So you're talking about, Adam, how this has become more valuable over time. It has become more valuable because we are able to use them more. We have more people using them, to Ben's your point about making this accessible. We've got more people creating RFDs. We've got more people reading RFDs in terms of the public and customers and so on. We've got these kind of fine-grained permissions so we can get the right RFD to the right person. It's been incredibly important for us. It is the backbone of Oxide.
Absolutely.
This is, it's been great. Not just the discussion, but boy, this work, all of you have done such terrific work on this stuff. And it's been really, really essential. Well, thank you, is all I got to say. Adam, thank you. Ben, David, Augustus, Robert, thank you for your, the 300,000 plus.
300,000, wild.
Yeah, I expect an out loud reading. Adam, thank you for all the collaboration you've done with all of your colleagues on RFDs.
Less work than Robert's words.
Really great stuff. And again, if you're looking at this thinking like, boy, I would love to adopt that system, please adopt it. We're really trying to make it so it is adoptable. So, take it lock, stock, and barrel. Take the parts that work and report back. We'd love to hear about it, because I think this is something that a lot of engineering organizations really, really need. On that, thanks, everybody. Thanks, Europe. I feel like we'll need to do a European-timed episode at a time when you're not in Europe, just so we can prove that we're like, oh, yeah, they're remote-friendly because the CEO no longer wants to work. Doesn't want to move his family. That's why they're remote-friendly. So we'll need to do some European-timed episodes. We got to do this at least like once a quarter or something like that.
Sure, that's the spirit.
There you go. Once a quarter, Europe.
Even you, Germany, and we're sorry again.
Exactly. Who could ask for anything more? All right. Thanks, everybody.